We welcome you to Airtime, presented by AIR, in partnership with the brand new Alamo Drafthouse DFW. And isn't this a grand location? Airtime is a signature artist interview series featuring artists and creative thinkers in Richardson and the Dallas-Fort Worth area, where artists share about their art and why their creativity makes a difference. It's September the 18th, 2013, and today's guest artist is percussionist Roland Moosekeys. Please give a warm welcome to our moderator, Chris Tucker.
And welcome again to Airtime here at the new Alamo Draft House at 100 South Central Expressway in Richardson, Texas. Alamo Draft House is essentially located on the southwest corner of Beltline Road and I-75. My name is Chris Tucker, and I'm your moderator. In my years as a radio announcer for WRR, composer, performer, and conductor, organizations such as Arts Incubator of Richardson engages communities with worthwhile events to showcase the arts. Airtime is a program designed to be a collective think tank on the arts, and we accomplish this by bringing in the artists from our community and engaging our audience members. Well, in radio broadcasting, time is an important component, as in the running of a movie theater. So to help us along the way, we have someone keeping an eye on the clock, which I will be doing tonight. So when the time for a particular section is up, we'll hear this sound, a desk bell. So please welcome to the Alamo Drafthouse stage, Theater 3, I believe, our guest today, percussionist Roland Moosekeys. So we have a bit of an imbalance here on the mic, so we have a mic far away from him and one that's going to be very close for me. But before we get started, thank you for coming.
My pleasure.
Pronounce your last name for me again.
Moosekeys.
Moosekeys.
Yes.
Very good. What is the origin of that name?
It's Spanish / Basque.
Basque.
It's from the Basque region of Spain, but also my immediate ancestors are from Mexico, the northern part of Mexico.
Okay.
There's a city by the name of Moosekeys in the state of Coahuila, and there is a town of Moosekeys in the Vizcaya Basque region of Spain, which is where the name originated.
Are you a child of the DFW Metroplex?
I am not. I am actually a native of the San Antonio area. And when I say area, it's because I lived in a very small community right outside of San Antonio. But San Antonio was pretty much my stomping grounds once I was old enough to drive, especially. So, anyway, that's...
Are you a son of a musical family?
It's a very interesting question. I am one of six siblings. All of us were musicians, and most of us still are. Neither of my parents were much of musicians. My mother wasn't a musician at all. My dad learned how to play banjo from a traveling minstrel musician that used to pass through the small community that he grew up in, which is where I grew up. And then once he served in the U.S. Army Air Corps, and once he was in the service, he took correspondence music courses through the mail for 50 cents each through the United States School of Music, and learned how to read music and read chords, and then advanced his skills on the banjo through this correspondence music course. And then he in turn taught all of us the fundamentals and basics of music and how to count and all that kind of stuff. And you know, it was had a profound impact on our family, obviously.
How early did he start passing on this musical wisdom to you?
Well, I'm the fourth of six kids. My oldest brother is also a professional percussionist. He has 10 years on me. So by the time I was just getting into elementary school, he was already in high school and was a pretty successful percussionist. And he was, you know, I hate to put it this way, but he was my favorite sibling, So I wanted to do everything he did.
You do understand this is podcasted, right?
Right.
You will hear this later on.
Well, and you know, just to qualify that, you know, I was only, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old. So, you know, I was just taken with everything he did. I wanted to do everything he did. And since he was a percussionist, that's what I wanted to do too. And so to this day, that parallel still continues. He is a professional percussionist still in Syracuse, New York, has played in the Syracuse Symphony Orchestra since 1974. And so, you know, we still maintain that, you know, I want to do everything he did, kind of trail there, I guess.
Yeah. Well, fast forward to today.
Sure.
You are a percussion director at Richardson High School.
That's right.
Just down the street from Alamo Draft House. You've taught for around 25 years, serving as the school's percussion coordinator and instructor. A great accomplishment, in my opinion, touching the souls of so many students. Why is teaching music important to you?
Well, this is actually my 33rd year at Richardson High School. Let me answer your question in two different ways. I love teaching. I love teaching music. I love teaching percussion. It's real important to me. And there is, but I want to say as a sidebar to that, it's extremely significant that I have been at Richardson High School all this time, because when I first came here, I'm a Texas native. I went to college in New York State, and then I got back to Texas as quick as I could. When I first came here, I had other opportunities, and I did actually teach in other locations around the area, in addition to Richardson, and then within 2 years, I narrowed my focus down to just Richardson and the Richardson High School attendance area, because it was pretty apparent at the time that the private lesson program that I got involved with right away was an extremely deep-rooted and very apparently very important to the community, you know, that kind of a program. And so I didn't sense that kind of depth in the other programs that I was teaching at. So I gravitated here more and more, and then eventually made this my exclusive home. And I've been here ever since. So it's been a real pleasure and a real honor to be here for this long. And you know, I'll continue to be there as long as they'll have me, or until I croak or whatever. But anyway, but it's important to me to teach music, because it is a craft that has to be carried on, and especially in the world of percussion, just in the era that I have gone from a junior high or high school student to a college student and then into the professional world, the percussion world has just has exploded many, you know, times over in terms of the industry, the concepts, the literature, and everything else. So it's been a great time to be a percussionist for me, and so I love passing on those things to my students as a teacher, and drawing on my professional experiences as a player, and bringing that to the students as well. It's passing a craft on, it's passing an art on to them. So that's real important to me.
Now, there's a growing concern, not only in Texas, but in all other states, about the treatment of classroom music. What is more important, this class or the other? Is music an elective, or is it a language? I asked you the question just a little while ago, why is teaching music important to you? But now I ask you, why is teaching music important for our youth?
Well, being involved in a music program, especially like at the high school, it's such a tight-knit community. A lot of kids having to work together, they learn so many life skills being involved in an organization like that. It goes beyond just going and sitting in an English class, and then it's more than just, I happen to have this class with this other buddy of mine or this other acquaintance. You actually share in the involvement, because it's an ensemble atmosphere, and you know, some kids serve in leadership positions, which really has nothing to do with music necessarily, but just the way that the organization functions, we have to have leadership, we have to have kids that can sort of wean the younger ones along and so forth. So I feel like they learn a lot of life skills being involved in a music program. And so absolutely, it's just as important as any other class.
Well, and I just want to say we thank you so much for your service as a teacher. A round of applause, please. In addition, you're a respected performer, a principal percussionist with the Dallas Wind Symphony and the East Texas Symphony Orchestra, along with guest appearances with the Dallas Opera, the Plano Symphony, and the San Antonio Symphony, among others. Now, how do you effectively balance a life of teaching with a life of performing? It seems like some aspects go hand in hand, but there may be some challenges.
There are, and I'm still trying to find the true answer to your question, because it's an ongoing struggle. I'm grateful to be in a situation where there is some flexibility. I mean, there are occasions where, although I have an established teaching schedule, occasionally I get an opportunity to go and perform somewhere, and so if it's possible, I will reschedule lessons or move some things around, juggle. I'm constantly juggling things, and occasionally I have to take the other road and say, no, sorry, I can't do that because I've got this teaching obligation or I've got this other playing obligation. It works both ways, but I really try to maintain it's a delicate balance, I'll say that, and sometimes I'm skirting the edges of both of those things to eke out a living. So that's what it amounts to. It does require a lot of juggling and balancing constantly.
Well, and I can totally understand, being a performer myself, the amount of practice time to prepare for your performing engagements. Mm-hmm. When do you find that time to practice, because you're spending so much time doing great work as a teacher?
Well, sometimes that's hard to do, my experience is that most of the time I don't have as much time to prepare as I would like to. So when I do have time, I try to make the most of that. And sometimes I have a chance to practice 10 or 15 minutes between lessons, or during my lunch break, or after a class. I mean, everywhere that there is an opportunity, I try to get some practice time in. But it never seems like I get enough of that in. So.
Well, did you always want to be a performer and a teacher, or was there a passion for another field of study? You mentioned cars and food to me earlier.
Well, cars and food are certainly passions of mine. But no, this was one of those things that, I have to relate, I have to put this in the form of a question when someone asks me, if a student comes to me and says, should I major in music or not? My answer generally is, if you're having to ask yourself that question, you probably shouldn't do it, because it is a noble career, but it's not the most cash friendly career. I guess that's the best way to put it. So if you're going to really study music and do that as a career, you have to know that's what you're going to do. That's what you really, really want to do, because there aren't a lot of people who are, just absolutely raking it in our profession. I mean, there's a lot of people, living very comfortably. I have to say that is absolutely true. But I wouldn't say that if you stack up a music career against, a lot of the other, professions out there, that it would rank at the top of the list by any means. It's certainly not that. So yeah, it's something I've always wanted to do. I never had to question there's never been anything else that I felt like I might have done that instead.
Right.
This was it for me. I knew this really early on.
Well, tell us about your passion for the culinary arts.
Well, that's really making it sound very fancy. I and my wife, who's in the audience here, we love to cook. Mm-hmm. I of Hispanic origin and she of Sicilian Italian origin. We can fill the house with some pretty nice aromas. Yeah, let's put it that way. And we don't compete, but we like to indulge in my native cuisine and her native cuisine, and she's an incredible cook. I like to cook. I don't cook as much as I used to, but you know, there's a few things that I feel like I, you know, I can be competitive with, I guess. So anyway, and of course the great thing is, you know, you cook and then the reward is you get to eat it, you know. You don't take it and sell it, you know, to someone else. At least I don't, you know. So.
Well, let's turn back the clock just a bit to your collegiate time.
Okay.
You're a product of the storied Eastman School of Music in Rochester, New York. And I'm sure many of the members of the audience here might know that name, but for those who don't, you can describe a little bit about the school. But can you tell us of any interesting stories from your time at Eastman?
I can think of a lot of stories. I'm not sure I can share them, but you know, that's for another time. My years at Eastman were just incredible. I mean, I was there in Rochester for 5 years, and aside from the weather, which was a drastic change from growing up in South Texas, I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was the winters that made me hurry back to Texas, I would have to say. But you know, it's the years at Eastman were just incredible. I mean, I didn't know how much I could not know until I got there, and then started seeing all these other students who had already been there maybe just a year longer than I had, and just the level of talent, the level of commitment, and then of course the professors and the artists that came there to perform and to lecture and so forth. It was a tremendous arena for just constantly improving, and that's what I felt like I was fortunate enough to be able to do at the Eastman School.
So. Well, speaking of those artists, as an up-and-coming performer and teacher yourself, who would you say were most influential to you and why? I know you had the honor of performing under the baton of Maestro Frederick Fennell with the Dallas Wind Symphony, but I know there's other colleagues, there's other instructors, and musical icons. Tell us about a few.
Well, you know, I have to give credit to my high school band directors, of course, Jerry Babbitt and Daniel Aleman, who are both well-known, well-respected band directors here in the state of Texas. They were my band directors the community I grew up in was so small, there was no school there. So we had to bus to the next town over to go to school. So I went to school in a town called Pearsall. I don't know if anybody's heard of Pearsall. It's about 50 miles south of San Antonio. So anyway, those two gentlemen really encouraged me to you know, further my craft and so forth. And when I arrived at the Eastman School, by that time, Dr. Frederick Fennell had actually already retired and moved on, had been a conductor with the Minnesota Orchestra, and then was conducting an orchestra in Florida. So I did the majority of my ensemble work there under the baton of Dr. Donald Hunsberger. And so one of the highlights of being in the Eastman Wind Ensemble, which he conducted, was that my first or second year there, the Eastman School celebrated the 25th anniversary of the Eastman Wind Ensemble. And along with the celebration, included in the celebration, they invited back Dr. Fennell to conduct the group, and any members who were available from the first 3 years of the Eastman Wind Ensemble. And so there were some really incredible, as we say, heavies that came back to perform, like Doria Dwyer, the principal flautist with the Boston Symphony Orchestra, and a number of other people. And then, of course, my percussion professor at the Eastman School, John Beck, was one of those charter members of the Eastman Wind Ensemble. So he performed as well. So it was great to see him perform in that idiom. And it was just a great experience. And there were others there that really had profound effects, like Sid Hopkinson, who was also a professor there at the time. Moving on, once I got past the Eastman School and got to Dallas, working with the folks that basically were involved with the Dallas Wind Symphony, have also had a pretty significant impact in my musical career.
So in the wind band world, we sometimes say that the percussion is the backbone of the ensemble. So being a percussionist, you need to be smart and coordinated to learn and maintain a high level of performance excellence for, on numerous instruments, not just one. You have to understand and process complex rhythms very quickly and play in different styles. Now, such an important position, you must practice all day.
Well,
Or try to, at least.
Yeah, well, I practice when I can.
Yeah.
You know, it's my teaching and my actual performing and rehearsal schedules and things like that do take up the vast majority of my you know, professional hours, and then I have family too, and so my wife and I are now empty nesters, but you know, we raised four musicians, and so we've been through all of that, as well, and it's, you know, it's always a battle to carve out time for both ends of your life, career and family. So
you performed in a number of styles, music styles, including Afro-Cuban, Brazilian music, and jazz. Mm-hmm. Is there a favorite for you?
Well, when I went to the Eastman School, I thought that my goal was to study strictly classical-oriented percussion. That I was, you know, I was probably going to play in a symphony orchestra, or I wanted to, or play timpani in a symphony orchestra, something of that matter. But I was pleasantly surprised at the incredible presence of the jazz program there. Also, it had a really renowned jazz program, and I couldn't resist. I got involved. I was already a drum set player of sorts. I had played in some rock bands and high school jazz band and so forth, and had not really thought that I was going to continue doing jazz ensemble kind of things. But once I was there, it was something I took a great interest in all of a sudden, and so I got involved with the jazz program and continued to develop my drum set skills, and so that's what kind of started broadening the areas that I wanted to study. And then through that, and through some of my peers and some of their acquaintances, I then really developed a real passion for Brazilian Afro-Cuban music. So that is what I always tell folks, that, you know, my profession is playing commercial and classical music. My passion is Latin music, you know, it's real easy to say it's in the blood, but it didn't necessarily come easy for me either. So I had to, I studied with some people that are, considered masters and, artists in those fields, and was able to expand my playing abilities into those areas as well.
So it sounds like the drum set for you has been a very important vehicle in your career.
It has. It's been kind of like the corner, or the kind of the central cog in everything that I do, because for instance, when I first, by the time I graduated from Eastman, I was doing a lot of commercial playing in dance bands and that sort of thing, and doing some classical work, but when I moved here, one of my goals was to get immersed. Even though I came here with a teaching position waiting for me, or teaching positions and opportunities waiting for me, I knew that I was going to want to get involved playing professionally as quickly as I could. And so the vehicle that allowed me to slide into that right away was the drum set, being available as a drum set player. I didn't come here and start playing timpani and xylophone and concert snare drum right away. It was actually the drum set that kind of helped me pay the bills and that sort of thing, and still does. So all along, the drum set has sort of been my, I hate to call it a crutch, because it's been so much more than that, but it's really been my, the drum set always has had my back, so to speak.
Well, I think this next question, you probably have answered this, but as I mentioned earlier, we are here in the new Alamo Draft House in Richardson, Texas, And later, we'll watch a movie dedicated to music focusing on the drum set player of a Beatles-like boy band.
Right.
A movie being titled That Thing You Do, and features, among others, Tom Hanks, Liv Tyler, as well as Tom Everett Scott as Guy Patterson.
Right.
So I wanted to ask you, growing up yourself, mm-hmm. were you a Guy Patterson? Did you have a boy band?
Well, very much so. I mean, I played in a rock band. I was, you know, without defining exactly what good is, I was a pretty good drum set player pretty early on. Uh-huh. And so when I was in the seventh grade, I was recruited as a drum set player with a high school garage band. So I was the youngest guy in the band by 3 or 4 or 5 years easily. The other guys in the band were juniors and seniors in high school. I was in the seventh grade, but I was able to hold my own with them. So I kind of went through that whole, you know, that experience of playing in a garage band. And then as I went on through my grade school years, I got involved with some other, you know, bands that I played drums with. And of course, I've seen my, especially both of my sons, who are both drum set players as well, they, you know, you hear the chatter and the talk, and there's always that comment you overhear about, yeah, we're going to play at this place, and there's going to be this agent there, and you know, we're probably going to sign with this, or we're going to sign with, you know, and of course, seldom does that actually materialize, but you see that potential for stardom just right around the corner, and I know that guy, you know, that actual fortune falls on him, and you know, I know that there was times when I felt like I'm almost there, you know, we're just about there. And both of my sons, you know, I've heard them go through that same you know, scenario where it's like, yeah, you know, our band, there's this agent that was talking to us, and you know, they're going to book us here, and they're going to book us there, and you know, those things rarely fall, you know, are followed through on, but you know, it's always nice to feel like you're on the brink of stardom, you know, and that sort of thing. So,
well, as Guy Patterson says in the movie, I am Spartacus at the moment in which he's ready to play. Right. Can you show us some skills on the drum set right now for us?
Certainly.
Would you guys like to hear him play some drum set?
What I'll do is sit and play some jazz styles first, and maybe something along the lines as you might see Guy play later in the movie.
Okay.
And I have to add also that probably my first most profound influence in the drum set was Gene Krupa. You know, so. Thank you. Okay. If I can give you just a little bit of background on this, there is a gentleman who is a Richardson native, whom I have to give some kudos and credit to for kind of helping me along this road, because when I was in college, I really got into the Afro-Cuban and Brazilian music scene. The only way that I was able to actually use those skills was in the jazz ensemble for the most part. When I moved here to Dallas, there was a gentleman by the name of Fernando Vicencio who lives here in Richardson, who is a native of Viña del Mar, Chile. And Vicho, as we call him, his real name is Fernando, but Vicho had a very successful Latin band, really gave me the opportunity to start actually utilizing a lot of these skills. And so what I ended up doing, because I knew that there was nobody else really doing this in this area, was to start integrating some other instruments into the standard drum set. So you see I have a set of bongos, I have a set of congas over here, I have some cowbells and some other gadgets. And so what I started doing was learning how to integrate these things to make the drum set kind of sound like a full Latin rhythm section. And so that's what I'm going to demonstrate now, is like it's kind of a cha-cha and mambo kind of thing, utilizing some of these instruments here.
Okay.
Was a combination of, I started out with some Afro-Cuban styles, I then played a couple of Brazilian things, and then went back to Afro-Cuban, and so, right. So a cross sampling.
Well, thank you. That sounded great. Exciting upcoming projects for you that we can look forward to?
Well, on a completely different note than what I just did there, this past summer, the Dallas Wind Symphony kind of went into uncharted waters with a recording project that we did. We've made, as you're aware of, many recordings of wind band literature, and those recordings have been very well received. But this past summer, we were invited to record the soundtrack music for a video game. A very, very well known, as they call it, they say it's an adult video game. Now, I'm not sure what that means exactly, okay? But I'm trying to remember the title of the game. It's called The Banner Saga. And so we spent 3 days at the Meyerson Symphony Hall recording this incredible music that was scored by a young composer by the name of Austin Wintry. And so we're waiting for that to be released. It should be released within the next month or two. And apparently the first incarnation of this particular game was wildly successful. And so the funding came through to make this recording project a reality that we did. So supposedly there's another one of those in the works, hopefully, that we will record maybe next summer. And this coming January, we just found out, we will be recording an album of trumpet concertos with our principal trumpet player. He's going to be doing all the trumpet work, and he's actually on the faculty at LSU and applied for this grant and through the state of Louisiana, and he received this grant to fund this recording. So that's another recording project that we'll be doing. And of course, right now we're in the we're right at the beginning of our season with the Wind Symphony and the East Texas Symphony Orchestra, and looking forward to doing some really great work. So I'm excited about the seasons coming up here.
Is there a website or someplace to go to find more information about you?
About myself? Not really, at least not yet. One of my daughters who works in web design keeps saying, "Dad, you need to put a website together." So I think eventually there'll be something. So I guess if you just kind of keep Googling my name, eventually something will come up of worth, you know, that of interest, other than, you know, I'm walking my dog or whatever you see on Facebook, you know, at any given time. So,
well, I'm sure many of us here will be interested to check out a little more about you on your new website. So let us know.
Okay. All right.
Let us know when that happens.
Do that. But you can find out what those groups that I am playing with regularly are doing. The Dallas Wind Symphony website is just dws.org. And of course the East Texas Symphony Orchestra, which is based in Tyler but made up of about 98% Dallas-based musicians, is also easy to find on the web.
So that means we're going to move now to question and answer from you. So Roland will stay there.
Okay.
And much like a TV talk show, I will walk around. If anybody has a question, just raise your hand and I will come to you. Any questions for him? Okay.
I was just curious, growing up to now, who some of your musical heroes are? What music you listen to and bands
what
you
music,
like, you know?
What music do I listen to now?
Starting from when you were young, like,
well,
to now, just people that have been specifically influential to you.
Okay, I can sort of categorize my musical influence probably in about three different eras. When I was growing up, as I mentioned to you earlier, my dad served in the Army Air Corps, and he was a huge fan of Glenn Miller, Benny Goodman in particular, and so he was really the person who introduced me to Gene Krupa. And of course, with my oldest brother being a drummer, my dad, I hate to say made us, but he made sure that all six of us were in band, and we played an instrument, and we practiced, and we became good. And not being in band was never an option. I mean, it was so incredibly important to him that we follow through on that, and that once we made that commitment in the fifth grade, when we graduated from high school, we would have completed 7 years in the band program, or 8 years, whatever it was. And so my first musical influence were listening to all those albums of big band music. Artie Shaw, Benny Goodman, all those just incredible big bands. Then of course, since I had three older siblings who were just the right age at just the right time to experience the British invasion. So the next wave of music that I really got into was, of course, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Herman's Hermits, all of those bands that were just even at that young of an age, I felt like I was paying more attention than the average youngster to that music and absorbing things, and what the drummer was doing. I mean, that was always focused on what's that drummer doing? What's he doing? What's Charlie Watts doing with this Rolling Stones tune? I mean, I remember, I think the first tune that I learned how to play on the drum set was Satisfaction. You know, as far as a piece that I actually played from beginning to end. Now, the very first thing I can recall ever learning to just bat around on the drums one was Sing, 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 the Gene Krupa. And I've played it many times since then, but that was an era of my musical taste. When I hit high school, I was very much into the horn bands, Chicago, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, those kinds of bands. As I went into college, I progressed to Tower Power, and then that's where my eyes really got open to the jazz of the time, like Chick Corea and people like that. And then one of the most amazing links that I feel like I experienced was that right when I got to the Eastman School, everybody was talking about this guy by the name of Steve Gadd, who was just starting to hit it big and was just, he was recording with everybody and he could just do no wrong. This guy was just tearing it up everywhere. And if any of you know anything about Steve Gadd, he is probably one of the most influential and significant drummers of the 20th century and beyond. And he was from Rochester. And he had been at the Eastman School just before I was there. So there was this incredible standard to try to live up to. You know, and the music, I got to where I just bought anything, any recording that he played on, I would go and buy it and study it because he was the definitive drummer to me. So that was the music that I got into. And then of course, once I got into all the Afro-Cuban and Brazilian music, then I started getting more into a lot of artists like Tito Puente. And then of course, when Poncho Sanchez established his band, I still listen to Poncho all the time. I play in a group that does some of his literature, so it's been a real amalgam over the years, starting with big band to rock and roll to jazz rock groups and then into the Latin thing. So it's a pretty wide variety of things that I listen to. That's a very long-winded answer to your question. Yes, sir.
I love the Gene Krupa chops and at the beginning of your set. That was I recalled that very well. Recently in small venues and three percussionists that I know, they're using, for a better term, wooden percussion boxes.
Uh-huh.
Is that something that's proliferating? Have you ever looked at that? And are any of your high school students interested in that type of percussion?
What you're talking about, is an instrument called the cajon. And the cajon is one of those instruments whose popularity has really exploded in probably the last 5 years or so. There are so many different varieties of cajons on the market now. I mean, they're very inexpensive now. They used to be very difficult to find. It's an instrument that everybody's taking to because it's one of those instruments that you can sort of pick up without a lot of training. I mean, just by listening. And you know what a lot of folks do on the cajon is emulate drum set type of beats on it by just hitting it different places to get different tones and different sounds. But yeah, that's a real popular instrument. I do have some students who have, you know, ventured out and learned, you know, picked up that instrument. You know, it's just like the djembe. I don't know if you know what a djembe is, but the djembe is sort of the semi-hourglass-shaped African drum that used to be, nobody had one unless you went to Africa and brought one back. And now they're everywhere. And so all of a sudden everybody's a djembe master, you know. But that's another instrument that has really followed that same kind of exploding popularity, just like the cajon.
Yes, I was wondering how you can, how you can really promote a style that you're interested in. For instance, say someone's looking for a Brazilian beat. How would you get someone to say, well, I know this Texan who plays in this wind symphony. He would be great as a Brazilian beat. How would you promote yourself to get yourself known in that kind of situation?
Well, through networking. I've been here in this community, in this area, for going on 33 years now. And in those, in my travels, in playing with a lot of different musicians and a lot of different venues and a lot of different scenarios, you get to meet people and you start learning about their side interests or other things that they're doing or other groups they're involved with. And then you you start inquiring, hey, do you know anybody who plays Brazilian music? And that's right. And eventually you start finding those people. You start finding those people and then you make contact and you go and listen to them. And you know, it's all about networking so that people know, hey, this guy has an interest in it. He has these skills. He knows the music. You know, to really learn those skills, you have to immerse yourself in it. You know, you not only listen to the music, you wear the clothes, you eat the food, you live that culture, and through that you become more immersed in what that music brings to the table, so to speak. So, you know, it's through networking. I mean, I know some Brazilian musicians through some Afro-Cuban musicians who happen to play together, and so it's just all about networking. You know, it's kind of how you do that.
So we have one more question.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I'm a drummer too, and I'm wondering if you use traditional or match grip more often.
I play traditional grip. Well, I'll be very honest with you. Until I came to Richardson to teach, I played traditional grip all the time. When I came here to teach, that was kind of one of the things that I was told I was going to have to address with the students, because that's what all the students that were here had already been taught, was how to play matched grip. So I basically had to do some on-the-job training. I mean, not that I didn't know how to do it, and my skill level was such that I could play matched grip. I just wasn't accustomed to doing it, and I didn't really favor doing that. But because the students, in the case of a lot of the students that I first started teaching, that was the only way they knew to play, I had to be able to help them develop their skills. So I do both now. And if you ever get a chance to come to see me play on the drum set, most likely you're going to see me playing traditional grip. If you ever go and see a Dallas Wind Symphony concert and see me play snare drum, which is what I do primarily with the Wind Symphony, you'll see me playing almost all the time matched grip. I have now adopted that and become so comfortable with it for my concert snare drum work that's how I play virtually all the time, with one exception, and that is when we play Sousa marches. When we play Sousa marches, I still raise my snare drum up, tilt it to the right, and play traditional grip, because to me that is the only way to play Sousa marches. That's very biased, but that's just me. So, anyway.
All right. So at this point, we're about to close out our portion of the show and get to the movie really soon. The way that we close things out is with the game. We call it the Top 10 Shorties. And essentially, we'll have 1 minute, and I'll be keeping the eye on the clock as well. And it's very short answers.
Sure.
You know, like okay. Peanut butter and jelly. Jump, okay. You know, that kind of stuff. So when we're ready, and here we go. Are you a practicing night owl or morning person?
Night owl.
As a musician, what do you see the most, or what do you use the most, pens or pencils?
Pencils.
Elvis or the Beatles?
Beatles.
Are you a cat or dog person?
Dog.
Would you rather play the drum set with drumsticks or wire brushes?
God, that's a hard one. Both. Just have to say both.
What's your favorite car, make and model, year if you know it?
Oh, wow. If I could have any car I could ever, any car, it would be a 1965 ragtop GTO, Pontiac GTO, with a 389 tri-power. Anybody who knows about cars knows what I'm talking about. Okay? Tri-power convertible, four-speed.
Okay, being a culinary admirer, what's your favorite food?
Probably my absolute most favorite food is a dish that my mother makes. It's a Mexican dish called carne guisada.
If you had $1 million, what would be the first item you would purchase?
A 1965 GTO convertible, four-speed tri-power.
Besides the drum set, what's your favorite percussion instrument to play?
Marimba.
Okay, and I was going to hit the bell, but I'm going to go 10 more seconds here. Okay. If you could take a week off from school and take a vacation, where would you go?
Rio de Janeiro.
Very good. Thank you so much for joining us.
Been my pleasure.
If you can head over to the drum set.
Sure.
I'd like you to play out I Am Spartacus once. To close us out, I'll give you the cue. This is Airtime, created by Arts Incubator of Richardson. And I'm your moderator, Chris Tucker, here at the new Alamo Draft House at 100 South Central Expressway in Richardson, Texas. Airtime is underwritten by Alamo Draft House, Dr. Barry Kinesic, Christensen Davis Bullock LLC, and Eric L. Wise, and funded in part by the City of Richardson through the City of Richardson Arts Commission. We invite you to check out Arts Incubator of Richardson, Arts Incubator Richardson. .org for future events and news. So Roland, give us a good 30 seconds out of some great drum set music.